The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2019-912, the State of Ohio versus Michael T. Grebius II. For the appellant, Mr. Koenig.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, Justices of the Court, Ms. Concannon. The appellant, Michael Grebius, was convicted in the Butler County Police Court of aggravated murder, and he received a sentence of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. We appealed his conviction and his sentence to the 12th District Court of Appeals, who overruled all assignments of error on the merits, save one. The court refused to consider the appeal on the basis of the sentence, stating that the Ohio Revised Code Section 2953.08(d)(3) prohibited appellate court review of sentences for aggravated murder and murder, and further rejected the appellant's request to have D3 declared unconstitutional to the extent it prevented his appeal from being heard. We are now before this court asking the court to declare that provision of the sentencing statute unconstitutional, once again, to the extent that it deprives the appellant of his right to appeal his sentence. Since the time that
And what did he argue below? I'm sorry, I'm over here. What did he argue below about why his Besides it being unconstitutional, what was his argument why his sentence was unlawful?
So, Your Honor, we raised two issues below. We raised constitutional issues based upon racial discrimination in the sentencing, and non-constitutional issues based upon the court's failure to comply with the statutory requirements of sentencing. Your Honor, this court has
so under our precedent now. The constitutional issue could be raised, right?
Yeah, I believe that the court is required to reverse and remand for the 12th District to consider the case consistent with State v. Patrick.
Did you put any evidence in that the sentence was unconstitutional, was racially discriminatory?
No, Your Honor, we raised that issue on appeal, and
My question is: was there any evidence in the record?
There is no evidence in the record, Your Honor, because the sentence was handed down, and then the case was concluded. There wasn't anything presented in the trial court to say that a sentence of a certain type that we didn't know was going to happen.
If you didn't put on any evidence of that, how could you ever prevail on that?
Well, Your Honor. That is a question that has been raised, obviously, by the state, that perhaps the means for doing this is post-conviction petition. It is an issue that was raised on appeal for the 12th Circuit to address based upon...
I understand it's raised on appeal, but you just told me that you submitted no evidence to show that, right?
Right, Your Honor. Based upon the authority that we did cite in the Court of Appeals, which... we would ask the court to look at and state or conclude shows racial discrimination in the sentencing of young African American men as compared to the rest of the population.
But I guess the question is, did you put on any evidence in your case that the sentence was racially discriminatory?
You mean in the trial court case?
In the trial court, that's where you put on evidence, yeah.
No, Your Honor, the sentence was the sentence of life without possibility of parole was the last thing that occurred in that case, and then the case terminated. There is no time then at that point to put on any evidence of racial discrimination. You did not know racial discrimination was going to occur prior to that sentence being imposed, and then the case terminated.
So are you asking us over here?
Yes, ma'am.
To your To your right.
Over there.
Your Honors, I recently had eye surgery, and I'm so sorry that I did not see everybody quickly, but...
It's okay. It's a long bench.
It is a long bench.
Are you asking us to take into account something statistical, like research, and then send it back and have the trial court examine those factors before it...
I don't believe that this appeal is before this court on the merits of the argument. This appeal is before the court solely on the question of is the appellant entitled to appellate review, and then that issue is before the appeals court, who may very well come to that conclusion or may not come to that conclusion. The state argued on the merits in its brief, but we did not appeal on the merits that we're entitled to reversal on the basis of racial discrimination. We appealed on the basis of the fact that D3 deprives us of the ability to even argue that in the appellate court. So the appellate court never reached that issue on the merits. If it's a bad issue, it's the appellate court's decision or purview to decide that and tell us that. Then I'll appeal.
Counsel, is there a constitutional right to appeal?
There is not, Your Honor. There is no constitutional right to appeal a sentence.
So what are you appealing?
We're appealing the sentence, Your Honor. There is no constitutional right to appeal unless a statute provides for it. And 2953.08 does provide a right of appeal for felony sentences. But what D3 does is it carves out that right or prohibits that right if you are convicted and sentenced for aggravated murder or murder. In the Patrick case, this court carved out that exception, an exception, if the appeal is based upon constitutional grounds. I submit that I believe Patrick is a flawed decision. Not that this court came to the wrong conclusion. Your analysis is absolutely correct because it allowed you to come to this conclusion without invalidating a statute on constitutional grounds, which is the proper thing for the court to do. However, I believe this court got it right in State versus Porterfield when it said that 2953.08 D3 means what it says. There is no right of appeal of a sentence for aggravated murder or murder. Period. There is no right of appeal.
Well, then what's your strongest constitutional argument? You're saying we got it right in Porterfield. So then what is your strongest constitutional argument against 2953.08D3?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, Your Honor, on its face, I believe 29, and as applied in this case, 2953.08D3 is unconstitutional because it is a due process and more importantly, an equal protection violation for people who are a small class of people who are convicted and sentenced for aggravated murder and murder. The denial of the right to be able to appeal your sentence, Your Honor, is itself a cruel and unusual punishment. And while I know that there are people who disagree that the denial of an appeal is a punishment, it is a punishment. To sentence somebody to life imprisonment with no possibility of parole and then say, and we're going to throw away the key, you're done. No matter how wrongful that sentence might have been, for whatever reason, to say you can't appeal, that is an additional punishment. Ask anyone who is serving life without the possibility of parole. Your Honor, people that are sent to prison and serving regular sentences and are thrown in the hole receive additional punishment. Their prison term doesn't increase. That's an additional punishment. It is an additional punishment to say you are not permitted to appeal your sentence because of D3. So our constitutional argument is it is a equal protection, due process, and cruel unusual punishment, 14th and 8th Amendment and sections 1, 9, and 16 of the Ohio Constitution. The question before this court simply is there a reason for D3 to continue to stand? This court has already carved out an exception from D3 for all constitutional grounds. So I suppose that what we're left with is that D3 is now exists on the books solely to prohibit appeals based upon non-constitutional grounds. And I see no compelling reason. I see no rational interest on the part of the state to do that.
Well, Counselor, let me ask this one question. Let's say we agree with you, and let's say the provision is unconstitutional or there's no reason for it to stand. And that means murder and aggravated murder, non-death penalty, can be reviewed. What would be reviewed?
Your Honor, what would be reviewed are the claims that we raised on appeal, and those include that it was racially discriminatory to this individual appellant, as well as to all black men, young black men, who are disproportionately sentenced to life without the possibility of parole.
So you would present maybe evidence or data that had defendants, similarly situated defendants?
I am limited at this point in time, Your Honor, because I'm in an appeal stage, to be able to only present data. I cannot present evidence because it wasn't presented in the court below.
Right.
I have a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel, which has been rejected for not doing things of that nature. But I'm limited in what I can do on appeal. I can't bring in things that are not in the record. So I can only point to data authority, whatever source I can find.
So it would be on its face and as applied?
Yes, Your Honor. On its face and as applied. On its face, there is no compelling reason, there's no rational basis anymore. Your Honor, the state of Ohio stands alone in the United States as being the only state that deprives a person who's been sentenced for aggravated murder or murder from being able to appeal that sentence.
Well, except that's not right now, right? You can't appeal that sentence. You just can't appeal it on the grounds set forth in 2953.08.
And I submit that there is no rational basis for that distinction, Your Honor. This court has now carved out. Your Honor, there's no doubt that prior to Patrick,
I don't think we've carved out anything. Just to be clear, it's the legislature that wrote the section that said nothing's. That says that 2953.08 is not appealable.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that. I think that the court was able to do that because 2953.08 is poorly written in some respects. I think that was a bad draftsmanship problem. I believe that prior to the passage of SB 2 in 1996, there was no right to appeal a sentence for a aggravated murder or murder sentence. There was no right of appeal. 2953.08, when it was enacted, created that right. And D3 says that right under this section does not apply to anybody convicted of and sentenced to aggravated murder or murder. And so what this court did was it said, well, wait a minute, we're gonna look at 2953.02 and we're gonna say that those are, you have a right to appeal on constitutional grounds there. And 2953.08 was not inconsistent with that. If that's what 2953.08 really meant, that was a really bizarre way to write that. It took 25 years to divine that intention from the legislature, and it escaped this court's attention in the case of Porterfield, Your Honor. I mean, I don't believe that that's what D3 says. I think D3 says you cannot appeal a sentence. And this court did find, because of the way the statutes were written, did find a way to say, oh, but constitutional grounds are okay to appeal under 2953.02.
Counsel, is there any time? You've got about 2.5 minutes left.
I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Is there any time when a statute can tamp down or eliminate a constitutional right?
No, Your Honor, it cannot.
Okay.
If it's a constitutional right, it can't.
All right. So the constitutional challenge to a sentence, we found, can be a path for clients like yours for appeal.
But Your Honor, there is no constitutional right to appeal.
Well, I understand.
It only exists by statute.
I understand that. All right. I'm not saying there's a constitutional right to appeal. There's a right to appeal on constitutional grounds.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the court did find that in Patrick?
Exactly.
We benefit from that. What about non-constitutional grounds? Is there a rational basis?
That's the question. Was the state legislature on firm footing legally to enact a statute such as this? And it's been upheld in the past.
Well, it has, Your Honor, but it's been whittled away, and we now stand alone. Ohio stands alone among every other state in the country as far as saying we're still going to deprive appellants of that right. Your Honor, I would like a couple of minutes for a rebuttal. So,
all right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Ms. Concannon.
Chief Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Willa Concannon. I am an assistant prosecuting attorney from Butler County, and I represent the state in this case. Your Honors, we have three main arguments that we're asking the court to consider today. I'll first summarize each one, and if the court will permit, I'll return to each in more detail. First, we assert that the court should not reach the constitutional challenge to 29-5308-D3. The appellant has now lost standing to challenge the statute, given this court's decisions in State versus Patrick and State versus Jones, which were decided after the court accepted review here. Those cases together show that D3 does not, in fact, deprive this appellant of the specific sentencing claims which he raised in the Court of Appeals.
How is that standing? I mean, you say he's deprived him of standing, but aren't it, what you're really saying is he can't win on the merits, but that's different than standing. You're saying he can't win on the merits, so he has no ability to challenge the statute is essentially your argument, which seems circular.
Your Honor, this court has said that in order for the court to turn to a constitutional challenge to a statute, that an appellant must demonstrate standing. And standing involves the demonstration of two steps. First, the appellant has to show that he's actually harmed by the statute. And then he has to show that the specific relief that he has requested will redress that harm.
But he's demonstrated both. You just say he's not entitled to the specific relief that he requested. I mean, he's obviously been injured by the statute. He can't challenge it. If he was successful in his argument, which, as you point out, doesn't have much legal basis, but if he were successful, he would get relief. So that's standing.
I disagree, Your Honor. He's not harmed by the statute because, first,
what you're saying is he's not harmed by the statute because it should be construed this way so it doesn't harm him.
No, Your Honor, I'm saying that this court has already said in Patrick that constitutional claims pertaining to an aggravated murder sentence can be reviewed under 29-5302, that those claims are not barred by 29-5308-D3. So in Patrick, this court unanimously said, first, that 29-5308 is not the exclusive basis for appealing a felony sentence, and that D3 does not preclude review under any other statute. And the court specifically pointed to 29-5302 and said that aggravated murder sentences can be appealed for constitutional error under that statute. So in our view, that is why there is no—
Okay, but the Court of Appeals said that it couldn't. So that gives him standing to challenge it, right?
And Your Honor, we agree that the Court of Appeals, we agree that the judgment on that front should be reversed, and that's why he would have no standing, because we agree now it's clear
If the judgment should be reversed, then he has standing by definition.
I think he does not have standing to ask the court to reach the constitutional question. We agree that
That's not the way standing works, right? If you have standing, you can make whatever arguments you want.
Your Honor, I suppose then I should say he has standing to ask the court to remand for proceedings consistent with Patrick. And with Patrick, he gets a remedy. His constitutional claims can be reviewed. But he does not have standing to be in the court now asking the court to strike down D3 as unconstitutionally barring his claims, because it does not bar his claims.
Well, I think what he's asked is that we send it back to the Court of Appeals and let the Court of Appeals actually deal with that issue. Now, let me just go a little further with that. So let's just say, by way of conjecture here, that the Court of Appeals, that we did that, the Court of Appeals considered it and said, you know, looking at these statistics, we want the trial court to, what's the remedy?
Well, I don't think that there would be a remedy here because he's pointing to evidence that's entirely off the record, that's outside of the record. So that would be appropriate for a post-conviction petition, but he has not raised it in a post-conviction petition. But
if he didn't raise it on appeal, and he could have, wouldn't it be res judicata on the post-conviction petition?
I think it would be res judicata on the post-conviction petition, but I don't think that that has anything to do with D3. So the Court of Appeals did not review any of these claims because of D3. We agree now that as to the constitutional claims, there's no question under Patrick that on remand, those questions can be considered by the Court of Appeals. Now, on remand, the Court of Appeals would then look at that assignment of error as it would any assignment of error. Regardless of D3, it looks at that. It has full jurisdiction to decide that issue. But then it applies the normal rules of appellate procedure, and it would determine, is this assignment of error based on evidence in the record? And because it's not, we submit that at that point, the court probably would not have jurisdiction to address it.
But isn't the evidence in the record the sentence? And if the Court of Appeals looks at statistics and research and the sentence, because the unconstitutional claim occurred only because of the sentence, so can't the Court of Appeals look at that?
I don't think the Court of Appeals can look at statistical evidence and studies.
That had been introduced in the trial court when he is there an opportunity post-sentence to introduce, to have a hearing to show that in the trial court?
I think that would have to occur as part of a post-conviction petition, Your Honor.
Okay. But you said if not raised on appeal, then it's res judicata. So it's very circular, and he's on the outside of the circle, not the inside.
Well, it was, again, I don't think that implicates D3 in any way. D3, if there was something on the record, in the record of this case, that he would point to some juror having bias or the court doing something improper or the prosecutors doing something improper, D3 does not preclude him from that particular review of
his
sentence.
We're talking about the sentence. The jury does reach some conclusion, but it's ultimately the sentencing court.
Yes, and Your Honor, again, our position is that can be reviewed on remand. It should be remanded to the Court of Appeals for review. Patrick means the Court of Appeals can look at a constitutional challenge. But then once the court looks at that particular claim, it has to ascertain, is this proper for direct appeal? Are we looking at something that's outside of the record and therefore we don't have jurisdiction? But that's a different issue than what is before the court today. The question before the court is D3 unconstitutional because it would preclude review of his claims? And D3 is not what is holding back the review of those claims.
Could D3 hold back his claims of ineffective assistance of counsel?
No, it would not, because ineffective assistance of counsel would be a constitutional claim.
Then am I hearing you correctly? That you would say we would remand on the authority of Patrick for the appellate court to examine the underlying constitutional challenge?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But you're saying D3 still does preclude any assignments of error that deal with the sentence being contrary to law?
I am not saying that, Your Honor. So if I can just remind the court, I want to address very specifically the three actual sentencing claims that were raised in the Court of Appeals, in our view, are what frame the issue here. So there were three specific claims. Two of them were constitutional. Those have already been discussed. And so, again, we agree on remand. The Court of Appeals can and should look at them.
Let me go back to that and to Justice Kennedy's question. I mean, your adversary has just told us that there's no evidence in the record of racial discrimination, and absent that, he cannot prevail on his constitutional claim. So is there any reason we just wouldn't decide the issue here rather than remand it back to the Court of Appeals?
Your Honor, I think that it would be proper to remand to the Court of Appeals because there was another constitutional question. I don't know if the court wants to reach that. There was another constitutional question about whether the appellant had a right to a particular jury instruction during the penalty phase. So there are two constitutional issues. But I do...
Go ahead, I'm sorry. If you were going to say the third?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. There was a third claim, and the appellant is now characterizing that as a contrary-to-law claim. But it was not a contrary-to-law claim. It was a request for plenary review in the Court of Appeals. So that third claim was a request that the Court of Appeals look at the mitigating factors that were presented by him in this case, and that the court modify and reduce the sentence from a life without parole sentence to a sentence of life with parole eligibility after 25 or 30 years.
So what? How would you characterize that claim?
That claim is a request for plenary review, and that claim is not available under 29 5308. So again,
isn't he saying that's part of the problem that the statute is unconstitutional because it doesn't allow that review for someone convicted of aggravated murder and murder, but it does for everyone else.
And that assertion is not correct after this court's decision in State versus Jones. So in State versus Jones, this court made clear that there is no plenary review under 295308. The court said under 295308.
But doesn't that get back to what Justice DeWine said? That's then an argument on the merits, saying that the court can't do this review, so therefore the Court of Appeals would affirm, as opposed to saying we're not even going to. I mean, it's almost like it's a fruitless argument, so therefore you can't make it.
Not at all, Your Honor. I think this goes directly to the jurisdictional issue and 295308. 295308 provides very limited statutory review for the classified felony sentences, for their compliance with the specific statutes that dictate the imposition of those sentences. There is no basis under 295308, and this is again what the court said in Jones, for the Court of Appeals to review a sentence and to substitute its judgment for that of the trial court as to what sentence is best supported by the record. And that's plenary or de novo review. And that's what this appellant is asking for, but that doesn't implicate D3 in any way. No felony offender can appeal under 295308 and get that type of review.
So then contrary to law means what?
Contrary to law, as this court defined it in both State versus Jones and State versus Patrick, would mean contrary to some specific sentencing statute. So he has not raised a contrary to law claim. So that issue we...
So law is only statutory law?
That's what this court said contrary to law meant in State versus Jones, and also reiterated that in Patrick, that under 295308G2B and under 295308A, the ground for appealing a sentence on the basis that it's contrary to law pertains only to review of whether that sentence complies with the specific applicable sentencing statutes.
So are you saying, is it safe to say all felony convictions and all felony sentences are only reviewable if they're contrary to law, meaning contrary to statutory law, or if they are unconstitutional?
Your Honor, I'm sorry, can you ask?
So the only mechanism by which a felony sentence is reviewable is if it's outlined in a statute where a contrary to law provision is, and contrary to law means statutory law, or it is, pursuant to Patrick, unconstitutional. Violation of equal protection, cruel and unusual punishment, due process.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that, that Patrick and Jones have clarified that for non-capital cases, for other than capital defendants who have an appeal of right to this court under 292905, there is no plenary review. There's review of a sentence for constitutionality and whether it complies with specific applicable sentencing statutes. We agree with that. And so that is what's hard to understand about the appellant's position today. He's almost asking this court to overrule its unanimous opinion in Patrick. He's now asking the court to say, well, no, the court got it right in Porterfield when the court seemed to say there was no review at all for aggravated murder sentences. But the court has now unanimously clarified in Patrick something that is very favorable for aggravated murder appeals. The court said that 295302 provides a right to appeal for constitutional error. And not only that, but the court said much more broadly that aggravated murder sentences are not precluded by D3 from appeal under any other sentencing statute. So the appellant is now asking the court today to step outside of his particular claims and answer hypotheticals as to what the precise scope of contrary to law review would be now that we know it's available.
So what purpose does it serve to maintain the language in 295308 that sentences for murder and aggravated murder are not reviewable or not appealable?
Well, the language in this statute actually says that sentences for aggravated murder are not appealable under that section. So as the court said in Patrick, The preclusive language in D3 doesn't say that aggravated murder sentences can't turn to any other available sentencing appeal statute. And the court pointed out that there are others. There's 295302, which the court specifically said 295302 provides a statutory right to appeal a criminal sentence.
So what's not appealable under that statute, as the language says?
What's not appealable under 295308?
Correct.
An aggravated murder sentence is not appealable on the grounds under 295308. And that makes sense, and that is rational, because the grounds in 295308 are specifically tailored to review classified felony sentences. They look at and evaluate whether the sentencing court complied with the Senate Bill 2 requirements for imposing.
And what's the logical difference between those sentences and, let's say, a sentence for aggravated assault or rape versus murder and aggravated murder?
For the classified felony sentences are sentenced under the Senate Bill 2 requirement. So a court is often making findings when it applies to the classified felonies. The court has to consider that the Senate Bill 2 sentencing statutes and note that it has and state that in its order. But as to the aggravated murder and murder sentencing scheme, which is in an entirely different part of the code, it's under 292902 through 292906, there are no findings required for those sentences. They're all mandatory life sentences. So they're simply not reviewable.
But they're life with different designations, without possibility of parole, with parole after 20 years. Those are distinct differences, especially if you're a 20-year-old defendant.
They are distinct differences, Your Honor, but that gets to plenary review. And so plenary review is not available under 295308. So the argument that plenary review, that there should be plenary review for a life without parole sentence because it is so serious, that simply is not before the court.
So two people commit the exact same crime. One gets life without the possibility of parole, and one gets life with possibility after 20 years. That's not reviewable.
That's not reviewable under 295308. And so D3 is not.
Is it reviewable at all?
I don't think it is reviewable under any other statute, but that is not because of D3. So D3 only precludes the appeal of an aggravated murder sentence under 295308.
But those would be reviewable if someone said the difference was because of racial discrimination or some other kind
Certainly,
of constitutional
violation. Certainly, Your Honor,
violation.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Your Honor. That's correct, for constitutional review. But the appellant's argument, besides the allegation of racial discrimination, is generally that he wants the same type of sentencing review as a capital defendant, and that he should have proportionality review and de novo review of the type that capital defendants get in their direct right of appeal.
And he's also saying that the same kind of review that classified, there's instances where people, say a 50-year-old defendant is sentenced to 60 years in prison for child pornography. That's effectively a life sentence, correct? But it's reviewable.
Your Honor, it is not reviewable for plenary review. There's no authority that the Court of Appeals has under 295308 to look at that sentence and look at the sentencing record and the trial and say, this sentence is not supported by the record.
But that person gets to go to an appeal, asserts his 2, 3, 4 assignments of error and have the trial court review them, as opposed to the trial court saying, oh, the statute says we can't review them and we kick you out and you don't get the merits even evaluated.
I think the merits would not be evaluated for an aggravated murder sentence or any of the classified felony sentences under 295308 when we're talking about plenary review.
Thank you, counsel. You've used your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Your Honor, one thing I want to make clear to the court is I do not want you to overrule Patrick. I'm fine with Patrick's decision as it stands. It does benefit my client. I only believe the court didn't go far enough, and that's what we're asking the court to do today. I'd like to address the issue with respect to the Jones case. Jones dealt with an appeal under 295308G, and G dealt with a weighing of the, and Jones, I mean, dealt with a weighing of the mitigating versus aggravating factors, thank you, Your Honor, to ask the court to determine whether the sentence was appropriate. That's not what we're doing in this case. We are not asking for plenary review of the sentencing factors. We're stating that the court did not comply with the sentencing factors, didn't comply with the sentencing statutes. We're not asking for plenary review at the appellate court level. We're asking the appellate court to say, to look at what was done at the trial court level, say you did not comply with the statutes, and remand it then to the trial court for application of the statutes properly. So we don't seek plenary review. I don't think Jones is applicable in this case, Your Honor. Ms. Concannon also mentioned that 2953.08 gives the grounds for appeal and says that it only applies to classified offenses, and therefore sentences for aggravated murder and murder, which are always life sentences, would not be or should not be reviewable under those grounds laid out in 2953.08A. Your Honor, the contrary to law provision is in fact the most critical one to somebody who's been sentenced for aggravated murder or murder. And if you don't have the opportunity to review that because D3 carves it out for now because of Patrick for non-constitutional grounds only, it is an equal protection deprivation of a class of offenders that is now just a sliver of the class of offenders. It used to be a much greater class of offenders because 2953.08D3 used to mean that no one is entitled to a review of their sentence for aggravated murder or murder. And now we find that there are, in fact, instances where somebody sentenced to that can, in fact, have their appeal heard on constitutional grounds. All we're asking this court to do is to say there's no reason left to hang on to the remnants of a law that's outdated, outmoded, and has no rational basis in the law, especially in view of the fact that no other state in the country does this. It has to be a constitutional problem. There's a Supreme Court justice, a United States Supreme Court justice, who tends to agree with that.
Why does it matter that we're one state that does this? Why? How's that relevant?
Well, Your Honor, it matters under the Eighth Amendment analysis of whether a statute can constitute cruel and unusual punishments if categorically
Each state have its right to control its own criminal statutes?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Every state has a right to do whatever it wants to do with its citizens unless that application of that law deprives a citizen of his constitutional rights.
What type of method is not the right to appeal? How is that a method of cruel and unusual punishment?
Well, Your Honor, if somebody is sentenced wrongly to life without the possibility of parole, and they do not have the ability to ever raise the issue on non-constitutional grounds with any court, that is itself additional punishment.
Well, why can't a state do that? What is cruel about that method?
What is cruel about not allowing somebody the opportunity to have their wrongfully imposed sentence reviewed?
Well, you're assuming it's wrongful. Their sentence appealed. Let's just keep it.
Well, if it's not wrong, then there's nothing wrong.
We don't know because it's not appealed.
Correct. And until you appeal it, you don't know.
There's no constitutional right to appeal.
There is no constitutional right to appeal. But when all the states, including Ohio, have granted the right to appeal all sentences to felony convicts, and then Ohio says, but we're going to carve out an exception for this one limited group that nobody else does anywhere in the country, I think that does constitute an Eighth Amendment violation.
You keep saying, I'm over here, sorry.
Yes, sir.
You keep saying that we're the only one in the country that does this.
Yes, sir.
But what you cite in support is a misinterpretation of the statute, saying that we're the only one in the country that doesn't allow people convicted of aggravated murder to appeal at all. So, I mean, are you sure you're correct when you say that? Are you sure that there aren't states that, I would assume there's some states that you can't raise certain arguments for certain crimes?
No, Your Honor, I will not. I am not 100% correct because I am relying on the amicus brief by the State Public Defender's Office that was filed in the Kinney.
Which was based on a completely different premise, which was that certain classes of offenders couldn't appeal at all. And we know that's not true because that's not what the statute says, and we've made that clear. So you keep citing that stat, but
Yes, Your Honor.
Again, you're citing it for a different premise than the one you're arguing.
No, I believe, Your Honor, that what that footnote in the amicus brief said was it said that sentences for aggravated murder and murder can be appealed in every other state.
Right, but they can be appealed in Ohio, too, just not on certain grounds.
D3 says they cannot be appealed at all.
Under this section. Again, you keep leaving out words.
And this section is 2953.08, which is the sentence that gives you the right to appeal sentences. It's a statute that gives you the right to appeal sentences.
Well, there are other rights to appeal sentences under Ohio law.
Prior to the enactment of 2953.08, there were other ways that sentences were appealed, but they were not based upon a right of an appeal. They were based upon errors that occurred that courts were willing to recognize. Most of the time when those...
So they weren't based on a right to appeal. They were based on errors that courts made, but people were allowed to appeal. So.
I am unable to cite off the top of my head, Your Honor, the different types of things that occurred before 1996 that were felons were able to appeal their sentence. I will say, however, the vast majority of those cases, the courts denied the ability to review based upon lack of jurisdiction. There isn't a right to appeal a sentence. And so if you didn't find something in some statute somewhere that the court was willing to entertain as a reason, there was no right. But it turned out that there were times when you could appeal. And I think that's what the legislature meant when they started the thing out that says where they recognize that there are other rights to appeal besides this right now we're creating in 2953.08.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.